listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right. Hello and welcome. Welcome to today's show on LA Talk Radio, Your Ultimate Life, the show that's dedicated to you to help you create a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy that you love getting up to every day and where you know you're creating good stuff in the world. We got a special guest today, Michael Heschen, who is a financial wizard and is here going to teach us some of the things that have moved him in his life and what he's all about. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, Kellen, how are you? Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Oh, you're just absolutely welcome. Glad to have you. So, you know, I don't do introductions other than I just said you're a financial wizard, so people can make out of that whatever they want. But one of the things I do like to have people start with is bragging about themselves just a bit, only not really bragging, just telling me what does Michael Heschen do on purpose to add good to the world, to make things better, to do good, because I know enough about you to know that that's true. So tell the listeners, what are those things?
Yeah, professionally, it's been a journey to get here. If you told my younger self when I was in my 20s that I'd be in the financial services space, I would have laughed you out of the room. Just, what are you talking about? Because back then, I had my own little business making boat covers and tops and upholstery for boat owners here on the East Coast. Had a, you know, small manufacturing company. I ran myself for 16 years and didn't really know anything about money and didn't really care that much about it. So, but it sort of informed me. And then just, you know how it goes. You go through life and I did that for 16 years and I didn't do it right. I didn't set it up as a business properly to sell it once I was done doing it. So I just burned out, had nothing really to show for it other than these products that were still on these boats. And I just had to tell people I was moving on. But what precipitated that was the first sort of inkling of leverage and a real asset. In our case, it was the first house that we bought back in 2002. And it was a rental. So we lived, it was a two family. So that was my first time thinking, oh, our first house and the person upstairs helping to pay for most of the mortgage. That's pretty cool. You know, and then we lived in it and that was a little bit too small because we had two little kids. So we bought this house, kept that one for a little bit and then sold it ourselves right before the downturn in 2008 and made a nice profit. So it was sort of just happened that way. It was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then I got interested in leverage more in this whole world out there. So, and I got into trading. I learned how to trade in the markets, options and futures and currencies. And so it all kind of led down this path where I became really interested in money. But what I do now is what I also learned doing that was there are a lot of things that are sort of rigged, not rigged, it's too strong, but sort of set up such that most people don't necessarily succeed at it. Wall Street based things, what the banks do. And so what I do is I say, look, there's an alternative way to grow and manage your money. And it's for people who are up to it, because it takes something. It's really exciting because I know how much of a difference it can make in their lives, and not just their lives, their kids' lives, their grandkids' lives, because it's really becomes kind of like an intergenerational play. So, you know, it was 40 years of going through business ownership, being a landlord, selling a property, being in the markets and seeing how they operate, like up front and close and personal. And then finding this thing called infinite banking and saying, oh, just more people need to know about this. It's kind of forgotten and very much in most quarters. People don't know they can do this thing that I teach. So,
you know, there's a couple of ways to think about it. Everybody goes through some kind of a journey in their life. Some are easy, some are hard. Everybody seems to think theirs is the hardest one that ever happened in the world. And that's okay, because maybe it's designed that way. But at some point, when you get to get on the other side of at least part of it, there seems to come up in us this desire to serve, to help other people. And it always has to do with something that we've learned. Like, you know, I wouldn't ever have a desire to help people garden because I suck at that and I've never learned it. So that wouldn't be the desire. But like, what is it in your heart? Because you could do what you do. You know, you can. We'll talk more about what it is in a minute. Infinite banking and being your own bank and so forth. You could do it that to just make a living. And there are maybe some that do that. But I suspect that there's more to it than that. You talked about intergenerational and families and grandkids and sort of had that feeling and the energy around that was kind of exciting. What is it in your heart that makes this important to you?
Yeah, it's a great question. We've talked a little bit about this, but if I went back and did it over again, I probably would give being a musician more of a complete and utter full shot at it. I sort of did it halfway throughout my life, and music is my first love. I think, and I'm okay with some of the decisions I made to still have it be a part of my life, but just saying, okay, I don't want to go through all that to try to make a living at it. And this is, it's not music, but there's a real creativity to what I do because it's not just transactional. It's all about relationships. And that was when I was playing music for people, it's that connection, like the communicating with people through this. I'm a guitar player, classical guitarist. And so I think there's a corollary to it, to my artistic side, because this is not about just transactions. It's about, let's look at your situation. What are your goals and aspirations? Because if you get the money equation handled, it just gives you so much more freedom to do what you want to do. And I think that's what kind of drives me. And then having gone through bankruptcy in 2008, I have a desire to teach people this so they can avoid having to go through that when the next downturn happens, which will happen at some point. So that's also.
Yeah, it will. And you know, it's interesting because there you've described a nexus. Okay, I did different things, music, maybe I should have done more of that, I don't know. I owned a business, didn't know a lot about that, and then sort of discovered the joy of leverage and investing. But after all that, there's two forks. You could say, well, I figured this out for me. I'm going to make all this money myself. I'm going to have leverageable assets and do trading and do this special kind of banking, and I've got it handled. And the rest of you guys, good luck. But that isn't what goes on in you, it sounds like. It sounds like you're interested in not only educating, but helping people to take more control of their lives, not just because it makes you clients, but because there's something inherently satisfying about that. Is that true, or did I miss...
No,
that.
You're spot on. I tell you, my younger, some of my younger clients are in their 20s and 30s, how just excited I am because I know that they learn about it, because it is a process to really, like anything of value, it takes a while to get it. But if they continue on this path of really taking over the banking function, which is really what this is about, that I can die knowing that they're going to, like 30, 40, 50 years down the road when I'm long gone, they'll be more than good. They'll be taken care of. I'm really into autonomy too. I used to play a lot of sports and I kind of gave up because I just got sick of coaches telling me what to do. And so I'm big into that, that people don't have to do the things that Wall Street and the government and the big banks tell you to do when it comes to your wealth. And so that's a real driver too. So it's very important to me. And I've lost a few clients over the years too, where they just, something came up, or they already had a financial advisor, a more typical way to think of them, like, do it in Wall Street, doing assets under management, that kind of thing. And it just breaks my heart because I feel bad for myself. It's a missed opportunity. Because they let someone else talk them into something that benefits them more than benefits the clients. So it means a lot to me, and that's why I do it. Even it's challenging for sure at times, because I am, and people who practice what I do, we're kind of up against what the typical knowledge out there and a whole industry that's geared towards very specific things, which are not this. So
yeah, so you know, I have a client who's in his late 20s, a coaching client, and I am amazed at his diligence and effort and he puts into the personal growth and development that he's doing. And I see that progress, and I regularly remark to him, and what you said made me think of this, that when I was 28 or 29, his age, the things that I'm teaching him that he's doing in his life, I had absolutely no clue, no idea, no inkling. And I think to myself, and I don't feel bad about it because I love my life and what it's been, even though it's been challenging and all the rest, like everybody's. But I say to him regularly, you know, if you are so far ahead of where I was at that time, I didn't even remotely understand these concepts and principles. And it sounds like your satisfaction in knowing that 10, 20, 30 years down the road, the people that you serve are going to be independent, more sovereign, able to take care of themselves, and their families will be set up. Mm-hmm. And that is a great amount of, it provides you a great amount of pride. Anyway, I was just thinking about that guy because you said that.
Yeah. So in a way, you feel like even though it can occur like things are just hell in the handbasket, that's not really true. I mean, it is in some parts, I guess, but you know, you can still one person at a time, one family at a time, know that there's improvement there. There's evolution. There's transformation happening in this thing we call the human race, even amidst all the nonsense, which is great, right?
There's plenty of nonsense. There's no question about that. There's plenty of distractions and struggle. So I have a question for you. You know, you have talked about, and lots of people do that I talk to, the system or the way things are. I just had a guest the other day that was talking about healthcare in this way and that, you know, the alternative this and against the system and that sort of thing. And that always brings up a question to me. How did we get here where the thing that we're encouraged to do by the people, you know, that sort of they is so against our interests and so not very beneficial, so that we need lone voices or forces like you and others to call out against that. How did we get here?
Have you ever read the Dune books by Frank Herbert by chance?
I have not all of them, but I certainly read the first one.
Yeah.
And I've seen the movies. And I'm regularly known for quoting some critic as saying that Dune was science fiction's supreme masterpiece. So, yes.
So second or third book, in the chapters, they have this, ahead of beginning of each chapter, this Princess Irulan, who is one of the characters, and she writes this little, like a little blurb at the beginning of each chapter, and there was one that really got my attention, and I have to kind of paraphrase it, but it was basically saying that, and this story takes place in the future where, you know, if you're not familiar with it, you know, you are, but, you know, the Earth has, or humans have expanded out into the universe, but all the same things we're dealing with now, they're dealing with them, you know, into the future, you know, aristocracy and as an emperor and all this stuff. And it makes a really good point in this chapter heading where it just says basically, you know, we are in a democracy or a republic or whatever country you're in. But what happens is that once those get established, there's just a new ruling class that's not a king anymore necessarily, but it's some form of ruling class. So in our country, it's, you know, it's the political system. It's big banks for sure, because they probably have more power than anybody. And you can track that pretty easily. And, you know, Wall Street ties in with that. And they've got a pretty sweet gig. Those who are in power and running those things doesn't make them bad people necessarily, but they've got a pretty sweet gig and they have a lot of influence and power. And I think they set these structures up that aren't necessarily in our best interest. It's more about kind of maintaining, you know, we got a good here, just kind of keep everybody sort of on level, you know, the worker bees kind of happy. And they may not even say it that way. And I'm not saying this as a conspiracy kind of thing. I just think it's natural human behavior. You know, so people who go into that sort of ruling class space, whether it's in banks or Wall Street firms, or, you know, you look at the history of like Wall Street firms and senators flopping back and forth, you know, leaving the Senate, going to Wall Street, coming back into the Senate. they're really in bed together. So it's, if you're not part of that class, you know, you don't get the benefits and the perks out of that. So it's kind of incumbent upon us who see that and identify that and go, hey, look, if you're interested in doing something different, that, by the way, the big banks that I've mentioned before, they use tons of the vehicle that I show people how to use, which are a certain type of whole life insurance policy, which is interesting. They would never tell you that. The Bay Bank or Bank of America, for example, like you could walk into one of their branches and say, hey, I'd like to buy an infinite banking whole life insurance policy. They would be like, what are you talking about? Yet at the corporate level, they have billions of dollars in these types of policies because they're safe, they're guaranteed, and there's no better place to keep their money. So
wow.
You can look at what they do, not what they tell you to do.
You know, that's funny because what that is that's like, it feels just like politics everywhere too, where it's like, yeah, you know, we'll take care of you. And what the subtext feels like is you're too stupid to know how to take care of yourself and you just mess it up. So we'll get it all organized for you. And, you know, if you'd be good, you can have a decent thing, but we'll handle this and don't worry about it. And it almost feels like that. I don't know. Am I exaggerating?
And not teach you a thing about money, how money works anywhere along the process, maybe in grad school or something, but that's an interesting thing too. It's, and I know one of my mentors says they actually took it out of, I've seen some evidence that there was, like, going way back to, like, you know, Otto von Bismarck. He's the one who created the whole pension system and the idea of retirement. He was a chancellor of Germany in the late 1800s. And also evidence even going back to, you know, where they said, look, let's set these public schooling system up. Just basic stuff. We don't want them getting too bright because those are our worker bees. We got to keep things running smoothly.
That's what it feels like. We need a whole wad of people to just make sure, I mean, you know, and it isn't servitude anymore, but it's like the hewers of wood and drawers of water. That's just what it feels like. Yeah. Well, so if you're talking about a regular person, and you're right, nobody, I mean, I took some economics in college and stuff like that, but the function of money and how it works, and, you know, where you talk about the Oak Island secret meetings and whatever all that stuff was, Federal Reserve and the XYZ families run the world behind the scenes and all that jazz. What does a person do who isn't trying to be a conspiracy theorist, although maybe it is, and maybe there are, and maybe this, that, and the other? What does a person do who wants to take a bit, and maybe there's no such thing as a bit because that's like dabbling in anything, but a bit more knowledgeable, sovereign control of their life? So they hear you talking and hear me talking and we're talking about this stuff and they're like, I got to fix that. What would they do?
They've got to commit to it. It has to be important to them. Because Nelson Nash is the one who he coined the phrase infinite banking concept. And he called it that because it's a concept. It's an idea. You have to think differently about money in order to pull it off. Because if you don't, you might have your 401k and, you know, after taxes, when you retire, there might be something there for a few years. But, you know, then you're looking at maybe going back to Walmart or something when you're 70 years old. Because there's not enough, and who knows what's going to happen.
Hey, I'm 70.
But you're unique. So you think outside. You're interested in continuing to learn. So you have to be interested and not be scared of it. Most people are scared of money. I mean, I just didn't really pay that much attention to it. You know, even my old business, I made just enough to get by, and I did okay. I made great product. That's where I hung my hat, because I was really interested in making this the finest product I could by hand. But it just, you know, I as I learn more, just learn more and find people who are, you know, have integrity, and they're, because unfortunately there are a lot of people in the financial world, if that's what we're focusing on, that they might think they're doing the right thing, but they also only can do what they're taught. So if they come through, you know, when I first started with my first life insurance company 12, 13 years ago, one of the first things they said was, you've got to get your securities license. That just gives you the ability to handle 401k money, all this money that earns retirement accounts. You have to have special licensing. that's where the money is, which, and there's like trillions of dollars of what they call qualified money out there that hasn't been, it's just, you know, going up and down with the market. And at some point people, they'll be forced to start drawing on it and paying taxes on it. And so it's, you have to be willing to take it on and not be intimidated by it and find, you know, guidance and people, because they're out there. You know, there are people like myself who are, or it's important that we teach people, you know, things that actually work and that benefit them. And it's not just, and we've already seen the other side and go, oh, okay. So actually that company I started with, they sold a life insurance product that's kind of sort of seems like what I do now. But once I really learned about infinite banking and there's a certain type of whole life insurance, I was like, I can't even work for you guys anymore, because that all you offer is a different type of life insurance policy that's not nearly as good. It has no guarantees, and it's still all the risk is on the client. So, and I just, and they don't sell the kind of policies that I do now. So I quit like a 2 days later once I learned that. So you have to be willing to think outside the box and then act. You probably know that, but I think it's a Aristotle quote, you know, knowledge is great, but if you don't do anything about it, it doesn't do any good.
So if I think about back through my life when people have tried to sell me life insurance, and I've owned some, and I'm going to demonstrate my complete lack of knowledge here, but I, you know, there was term life insurance, and I had some of that for a while and, you know, bought some, and then there was whole life insurance, and then there was something I heard of called universal whole life insurance, and I'm not going to pretend that I can tell you the nuances, but you've referred both there in your example and speaking earlier of different kinds. How many different kinds of life insurance, meaning I pay some money to somebody so that I get something, somebody gets something because I'm dead if I die. How many different kinds of life insurance are there?
Yeah, I can quickly go through it. So term insurance, just like I said, it's for a specific period of time. And most people, their experiences with when through their job, they'll get what's called annual renewable term. Like every year it kicks in, and usually the company might pay for it, or they might split the cost with you. And that's usually maybe some, you know, your income level, or maybe a little bit more than your income. That's mostly just to cover, like, if you die while you're with them and you have this insurance, it pays out and covers, like, you know, your funeral and stuff like that. And then people also will get term, like 10-year term, 20-year term. There's no cash value. It's strictly, the only benefit is if the person dies and then a check gets cut to the beneficiaries. The interesting thing about term insurance is it almost never pays out. It's like, it might be around 1%, but for a long time, it was less than 1% of all term life insurance policies actually paid out. Because what happens is people leave a job, so that goes away, doesn't go with them. And then maybe they never get insurance again, or maybe they get 10-20 year term insurance to cover. Like the first insurance I got was when my wife was 20-year term insurance for $250,000 for each of us. And the idea was just to cover that 20 years of raising the kids, basically. Because we got them when my oldest was born, my youngest was born. So, and then it just went away, and we never renewed it. And then later I learned about whole life. So that's what term is. There's no cash value. It's not an asset unless you die. And most of them, because of their nature, they actually don't pay out, because people, they just run out. And people don't do anything about it.
So that's a big cash grab for insurance companies if they never pay out.
They love them. The benefits of those, they do serve a purpose. Like, I'm glad we have those things. And they were cheap. It was, you know, they're very inexpensive because it's not an actual asset. So there's that. And then there's IUL, which are, then there was whole life, which are the oldest ones. That's what I'm talking about, where it's for your whole life as long as the premiums are paid. The guaranteed premiums are never going to go up. They're locked in for the whole life of the contract. And they grow what's called cash value, which is something that they started back in the 1880s as a part of the policy. And you could always tap into that cash value for whatever you want, whenever you want, historically. In the U.S. back in probably pre-1970s, it was very common for people to have whole life insurance as their main thing through which they ran their money as far as an asset besides their home. And it just started to shift when they introduced 401ks and had companies they had to offer them. And then everything got shifted over to Wall Street related, you know, in the market at risk. So all these people are forced to have their savings in something that they have no control over and they don't understand, most people.
Yeah, I did that. I mean, you know, the 6% matching and all this crap, yeah, and the company says, we're going to do this and up to this amount, we're going to give you money. And, you know, it's like, oh, man, free money, right?
Yep.
But, you know, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, right?
Yeah, universal life is a little bit different. It's permanent, but it's not whole life. It doesn't have the guarantees that whole life does, and it just functions differently. It's still tied to the market, but you're not in it, you know, directly, but it has caps. And you can make them look like a good, you know, infinite banking type of whole life policy, but it's not, it's just not the same. It doesn't have the guarantees. And so that's why I don't use them. I could, you know, I certainly could. I used to before I knew better. And then there's something called variable universal life where it's like in the market. So it's actually, you decide what it wants to be. And so those are the main types of life insurance. There's even a more recent thing called a life settlement, which is interesting. So you think of a whole life, most people think of it, I think, incorrectly. It's an asset, but it's not in the investment category. It's more like in the savings category because of the guarantees and the growth of it. People tend to get confused. They go, oh, whole life is a terrible investment. Well, that's because it's not. It's not an investment at all. It's really more like a hybrid of a savings account, line of credit that you control with a death benefit that does over time start to grow internally like an investment. But they're distinctions, but there's a thing called a life settlement where investors are actually going out, identifying older people who have permanent life insurance that has cash value. And they're saying, hey, we'll make you a deal. So your policy has a $2 million death benefit. You've got $100,000 cash value. You know, your kids are all grown. You don't care about the death benefit anymore, and you could use some cash. We'll buy that for you for $80,000. And so there's a whole market, and then the investors buy that. So they pay the owner and the insured. Usually it's one and the same, but now it's an investment, and they'll get paid at some point that $2 million when the person passes away. So it's an interesting.
So they keep paying the premiums, and they're buying out the. You know, you see those ads on TV. Call so and so. You're sitting on a gold mine. Don't let your policy lapse. And so, and you know, I saw a mystery. It was fiction, but it was a mystery series about someone who was going around doing that, buying people's insurance policies and holding them, buying them out for way less than whatever. And then holding them until they croaked. Only the mystery part of it was he was then arranging their early premature death, so they would get the payout, right? Some accident, anyway,
it became pretty popular back during the AIDS epidemic, which kind of makes sense. You have, you know, these guys be pretty sharky. Hey, we have this whole population that are not going to live much longer. Let's go see if we can. You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's gotten much more legitimate as it's, you know, other companies are offering it. And, you know, where it's almost like a reverse mortgage in a way. So for some people, it could make sense to, if they don't need, they don't want to keep paying the premiums, they could use $100,000 right now.
Yeah, no, I get it. So here's some, we'll come back to this stuff in a minute, because I want you to talk about the actual instrument that you use, but I want to do something else first. And that is, as I'm watching you talk, I'm asking you these questions. I'm watching the energy of Michael get all excited. You're leaning forward. You're smiling. You're moving around. So you're in your area of expertise. And what makes me interested about that is, I mean, we know each other a bit. And when we are doing the things, when we're engaged in the things that we love to do and we enjoy, then not only do we get excited about it and we have more energy, but there's a different energy is the same word, different spirit around us that carries authenticity and realness about it. So when I asked earlier about your heart, when I use that word, it just means the reason that Michael is still breathing. Like, how important, if you think about, you know, I don't know how many years you've got left to live. I bet you've talked to an actuary and you've got that all calculated in your insurance policies. But whatever, why is this particular work so important to you? And do you plan on, quote, retiring from this and doing something that you really want to do? Or does this work give you life energy?
This stuff, this work does give me life energy. And it's also, I've been able to start, I think I told you this before, I had some issues with my hand that have been largely fixed, and I'm able to play regularly my guitar again. And I started studying with my old teacher again after about a 10-year hiatus. And so I'm actually good. So yeah, this does give me, it really does. It just, it enlivens me. And I did something really smart. I think about a year and a half ago, I partnered with another firm. So I still have my own business, which is a perfect asset. But I found a firm in Arizona, about 12, 15 folks who do the same thing as me. And they came through the same pipeline and learned from the Nelson Nash Institute, Nelson being the one who created this whole thing. So I know their heart's in the right place. And it's another reason I did that was I started to see myself going down the path I did before with my old business, where I insisted on doing it myself because I needed to do it right, because they were buying something I made by hand. So I never expanded. I never took on employees because I didn't trust anybody. And I found myself doing the same kind of thing in this practice a couple of years ago. I was like, I don't want to do that because, you know, if I just kick the bucket, my clients will become orphans. And that's what they call them in the trade, in the life insurance trade. And they just get assigned to someone else, some other agent who's in that, you know, who's worked for that company. And I don't want that to happen. So with this partnership with the guys and the gals from Factum, I know that if I suddenly go, my folks will be taken care of because they'll be in the system, and somebody who knows what they're doing and has a heart of gold will take care of them, you know?
So. Yeah. So tell me, let's move a little bit to the music. So I'm glad your hands are healed. And you mentioned classical guitar, which I actually didn't know. I knew you were a guitar player, but you know, somehow I imagined you jumping up and down on stage with a long-haired rock band. Not really. I don't know. But tell me about your classical guitar journey and what drew you into that.
Well, it's funny. It's mostly my family's background. Both my parents were real music lovers. My dad, especially, was a musician, played jazz in a band when he was younger. And I know he played big stand-up bass. He was really into Mingus and before that some of the Coltrane and Dizzy Gillespie.
So
and
those guys, Ray Brown bassist would have been one of his guys.
But he got married and then had kids, and then he got into the corporate world and worked himself up the ladder. So he stopped playing, but he could still. We had a piano at home, and we just listened to all kinds of music. I mean, Beatles and operas and jazz. And I remember my first concert was a string quartet in D.C. And mm-hmm. I was like 5 years old. My older sister and brothers fell asleep, but I was just like enraptured by this string quartet. So I think it was just that background. And then, you know, I started, you know, remember back in the day, everybody took piano lessons. So I started playing piano when I was like in fourth grade and did that for 5 years. But I thought guitar was really cool. So, you know, I got a guitar and then I was in a band for a while. I could sing too. So I was always like the singer, rhythm guitar player in some bands in high school and then into college. But I was always interested in what I call like art music, the stuff that's a little bit more complicated and more interesting. And so I just started to take lessons in college for classical guitar. And I think, you know, having played piano helped with my fingers pretty dexterous, you know. So that's kind of, you know, and then I didn't get into the school of music because I didn't work hard enough to pass the audition, which was an interesting lesson. But I kept playing. When we moved in back to New England, my current teacher is a Berkeley grad from France, and he's a composer and plays jazz and sitar and classical. And it's just I just went up to see him on Sunday. We do like Zoom lessons. And then every once in a while I shoot up there and go hang out with him. It's he's a real taskmaster. He's a bastard, but I need it. Right. Cause I developed a lot of bad habits over the last 10 years and I wasn't playing much though.
Yeah. Have you seen, there's a little sidetrack here, but there's a guy on YouTube, classical sort of guitar, and his name Marcin something. Have you seen him?
Is that the one who plays? He plays an electric guitar. Is that the one you mean?
No, he plays it, and he does rhythm stuff. I'll send you a YouTube link later.
Yeah, but there are so many great players out there. It's insane.
I've never seen anything like this guy. Yeah. He's like four people, what he can do.
Being exposed to it, and then also seeing my dad when he was in the corporate, he worked himself up the corporate ladder, and he always regretted that he didn't keep playing. And one of his buddies gifted him a stand-up bass when we were down in Florida, and my dad was a president of a small, it was a defense-related manufacturing company, and it was just so sweet. This guy's uncle was a professional jazz musician in New York City, had passed away and left him his bass. And this guy didn't play anything. And he gifted my dad. He had some friends drive it down to Florida from New York City and gave it to my dad. I still have it. It's an old K, 1943 K bass. So we got to play a little bit. And I know that he regretted that he stopped playing. And I also knew there were kids I started playing with in high school who stopped at some point. And I was like, I'm just not going to stop because I know they all regret stopping. So, there are a couple.
How cool
times,
is that?
Yeah. There are times that you're like, oh God, do I have to keep doing this or working at it?
But yes. Yes. And so let's take that. Got to keep working at it back to the insurance now. So yep. I asked you how many kinds of insurance are, then you went through that, but you've alluded in your explanation to some special, piece of insurance that's required to do what you do. And there's not enough time for a class or anything like that, but tell me a little bit about this, this kind of policy that you have and how to think differently. I guess most what I'm asking is, what do I need to do to think differently about money so that anything that you would teach me makes sense?
If it's okay, let me just say, like, quickly what the policy is and what the companies, they're what are called participating whole life insurance policies with certain what are called mutual life insurance companies in the U.S. You can do it in Canada too. It's very similar, but there are some distinctions. But as far as I know, those are the only two countries that have whole permanent life insurance set up the right way that you can do this and start to, what Nelson said, is take over the banking function and become your own banker. So these are companies, they're mutual. So we don't want any exposure to the stock market. So these companies, people would have heard the biggest ones you've heard about, like New York Life, Northwestern Mutual, Mass Mutual. Those are some of the bigger ones, but there's about 12 of them in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And they're mutually owned. So they're not publicly traded. There's no share price. They don't care about what the market does. They don't look at the stock market. So they function differently. So you can't have a situation where some shareholder owns enough shares and they can redirect how the company goes. We don't want that. So they've all been around for 150 plus years. And the way to think about them, they have a track record of being really good at what they do. They have to take the premiums and invest it in things like bonds, real estate, corporate bonds, that very safe types of instruments so that they can back up those guarantees. So the idea is that you're almost like, if you're making money, where are you putting it? If you're sticking it in a bank savings account, you're getting squat for interest rate. Or if you're in a high yield, you're paying taxes on that. Put as much as you can into these policies because the internal growth is all tax-free because the IRS treats it as if you've already paid taxes on it. So the internal growth is not taxed. And so there's that. There's also a death benefit, which the savings account does not have. So there's protection. And the idea is that when you set them up the right way, there's a lot of cash available that you can do whatever you want with. And the idea is, that's why I said earlier, it's kind of like a hybrid of a savings account, line of credit. that you have complete ownership of, and the privacy part's huge, because even if you go to apply for a loan with somebody for something, they cannot legally look inside your whole life policy's cash value to determine like whether you're credit worthy or not. That's private between you and the insurance company. So there's just their like privacy, the growth, the guaranteed growth. And then over time, these things, the internal growth is pretty, it's, you know, we're talking like 8, 9, 10%, but it takes a while. But you have to set them up the right way with the right company. And I think one of the most powerful things is a lot of my clients, they're like middle class, will get them started, you know, educate them and get their minds. I can understand this. Is there any debt that we could go buy? Not just pay off, go buy it. So I have a client recently who was paying $1,000 a month for a new car.
Right.
And she got her policy enough cash value where she could tap it. When you tap these things, you take a loan out from the insurance company. So you're not even dipping into the principal. The principal of the policy keeps growing because you take a loan out from the life insurance company and then go buy that car. You pay it off. And then that $1,000 a month that was going away from you, never to be seen again at interest, probably 8-9% interest, now comes back to you. You pay it back to the insurance company. It restocks the shelves. So that's, think about it, in her case, that's probably $40,000 that she gets to keep now because she did it this way.
When you say you take a loan and it doesn't affect the asset that you've accumulated or the money that's put in there, what collateralizes your loan?
The cash value.
Okay, so the cash value. How long does it take before? Like, I've seen the presentations, maybe some of the listeners have too, and you know, they say, well, you know, you do this for a few years and that sort of hand waving few years doesn't, I don't know what that means. So how long does it take before somebody could do that and go take 40 or 50 or, and I realize it depends on how much you're committed to put in there. In other words, what the premium is, but you know, for a 35-year-old person that suddenly sees the light and he comes and says, okay, Michael, handle me. How long does it take before you can actually start doing the kinds of things that are so attractive about this becoming your own bank?
It does depend on the premium size. So a good sort of rule of thumb is, like in the case of that woman I mentioned, her husband was a client of mine before, and she's started about a little over a year ago with me. And I think her total annual premium, because the way you think about these things generally is annual premium. To the complete opposite of what most people think about for life insurance, where you're paying monthly for the biggest best benefit and the lowest premium. We want to switch that, because this is a growing asset. You want to get as much money as you can. The annual premium premiums for most of my, I'd say on average, they're not huge, maybe $20,000 a year, $15,000-$20,000 a year. Some are quite a bit more, but like there's no, I'm working on a case now, a woman is going to be doing about $80,000 a year, but she's making more money. It's within, you know, there are certain parameters. So it depends. So say in this case of this woman I mentioned with the car, it was less than 20 a year. So she paid her first 20. 2 weeks later, about 70% of that 20, so let's call it 12,000, 13,000, 14,000 was available cash that she could tap into. It's a pretty quick turnaround.
Wow. So one of the things you just said, and I know I'm interrupting you, but put a comma right where you're at, because the really key piece here is, you're right. We want the lowest premium for the biggest death benefit the old way. And what you're saying here is, because this is now available to you, you don't think about premiums as lost money, which is what you do when you're buying life insurance. Even if they tell you, it's going to build some cash value. Yeah, I know, in 25 years. What you're saying is, no, pay the most premium you can possibly pay within reason and whatever rules there are, so that you protect that money, because it's all after-tax money. So I'm paying it, and I pay as much as I can, because that protects that. It's like savings. So it's like, I'm going to put it in savings, but savings that doesn't, so better rate than savings, and it's not taxable. So it's like I found a magical bank that pays great savings, doesn't charge any fees, and the interest that I'm earning is not taxable.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and the thing too with any money sitting in a bank, I had a client, she didn't tell me this until after she was with me for a couple of years, she'd go, oh, I have some money in savings, a high yield savings account. And I said, oh, great. You know, that'd be better served. I didn't, in my head, I said, you know, you'd be better off putting it in a policy. But she had a fairly small policy. And I said, well, what's the interest rate on it? She says, it started out at like 5 or 6, and now they dropped it to 3. That's the thing. When your money is sitting in a bank, you don't control it. I won't get into the weeds too much, but coming out of 2008, the Dodd-Frank Act, which was created out of that, and presumably to protect us. But it part of that is it actually, when your money is in the bank, they really own it. you have access to it, but as more of like a first lien position. So they can change the rules anytime, and they do. They often do. So in these whole life insurance contracts, they can't. Once you get it locked in, the interest rate gets locked in. I mentioned before. So yeah, it's very much, it's more like, where am I depositing my money?
Yeah.
Yes. And there's a cost to it. And there's a big death benefit, you know, in her case, but yeah, that's how it works. So in her case, in year two, she paid another, I think it was 14, 15,000. And then she had enough cash value. I think it was about 20,000 where she could go take a loan out from the insurance company and pay the car off. And I said, most people might go, well, I'm done with that. No, because you have a system that you want to keep using over and over again. So just, you're now on the dual wall. You're the lender for that vehicle, and you're also the client. And it behooves you to pay yourself the lender, because you're going to need money for something else later, right?
All right. So we have a few minutes left, like 3. So I want to, because I see you again getting excited about this, so I want you to do 2 things. Okay. The question I have for you now is, what didn't we talk about, either about your personal passion, your music, or the banking or insurance, that we didn't talk about? And the second thing is, where can people find more Michael if they want to come and follow up with you? And I have heard you talk before, and so I would recommend without hesitation anyone listening to trust this guy. And I don't usually say that but I know him. So what else did we not talk about? And where can people find out more, Michael?
I think a great way, I'll say 2 things. If you're at all interested, I would get this book, Becoming Your Own Banker by Nelson Nash. It's a great read, and it talks a lot about changing human behavior because around money. Because if you don't, it's gonna be really hard to win the money game unless you win the lottery or something, or even then. So I would start there. One of the first things he says is that the problem that infinite banking with these whole life insurance policies solves is this. When you think about it, we finance everything in life. Maybe we might barter here and there, but generally we finance everything. So let that seep in your brain. We usually save up, we're making our money, we're setting it aside, saving it, and paying out of pocket for it, whatever it is, bills, utilities, larger purchases. And when we do that, we lose the ability for that money to earn any interest for us. That's one way. So we finance that way. The other way, which is a bit more dangerous, is we borrow from outside lenders to get our stuff. And then we're losing and paying interest to them. So this solves that problem, because when you have your own money in your own system, and it tends to be a system of policies, you're not losing that interest. It's coming back in your system. One of my mentors called it, you're creating a closed loop economy for yourself. Mm-hmm. Think about it. There's a broader economy, but the most important economy is our own, our families. We're money coming in, money going out, keeping some of it. And this solves that problem. So I think play with that. The idea that we finance everything, and the 2 ways that we know about, we have the money doesn't earn anything. It just goes away. We get our stuff, but that's it. Why not do what the banks do and keep it in our own system and benefit like they do for themselves and those entities, but for ourselves and our family, our business.
So that's a great book. I'm sure I haven't read it yet. Do you have writings or anything that you've written that talk about your stuff that people ought to read, or not yet?
They can go to my website, maybe kind of tie into, it's called theperfectasset.com. and inside of there, because I think these things are the perfect asset. You can get, I wrote an ebook, you'll like this, Kellen, a few years ago, and I use an analogy with these things. J.S. Bach is probably my favorite composer, and you probably know this, but there was a period of time after he died where he was completely forgotten about. His sons, he had very well-known sons who kind of took over the Bach name. And it wasn't, it was like 150 years later, Felix Mendelssohn kind of rediscovered like these manuscripts, like, God, this guy was really good. We should probably check him out, and started performing them. And now he's, you know, years later, he's still probably the most popular, but he was completely forgot about because human nature is to move on to the next shiny thing. And then I think these policies are kind of like that. They, you know, they kind of got forgotten about by a lot of people. And it's my job is to try to say, look, no, you should look at these things. That's why Nelson wrote that book. So you can go to that website. I have an ebook. I haven't written. I know you're working on me to write a larger book.
Hey, whatever makes sense for you. But so I want people to hear this. Theperfectasset.com.
Yes.
Theperfectasset.com. You can find out more about Michael, more about the process he's talking about. And I am familiar with it, and I know him personally. So check that out. And then he also referred to becoming your own banker by another fellow who's the creator of this thing. Michael, I want to thank you for sharing your heart, your energy, and for being with me today on the show.
Thank you, sir. We'll see you soon.
All right. So listeners, I want you to take this to heart. Theperfectasset.com. Go there right now and just browse. Take a look. Check out his ebook. Check out the things that he's taught you because they're real. They work, and you can create your own closed loop system where you get it. You get the benefits, the interest, and all the kinds of things that today we're just turning over to everybody else. And this is one more tool to help you master your finances. And we all know when we've got finances mastered, that's one thing that's not in the way anymore of creating your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.